Welcome back, fight fans, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. We are back 2 weeks in a row, and we have a lot to talk about. I'm your host, Jake Jones, and my co-host this week is the voice for a second week running. He's the king of the north, Newcastle's very own, Sean Gilley. How are things, mate?
I'm good, mate. It's going to be back. It is going to be back.
Absolutely, man. Well, we're going to move on to the purpose of the show, our recap of last weekend's event and our preview of this weekend's up-and-coming card. Before we start it, is anyone missing an ear? That disgusting elbow from Max Griffin that literally partially tore off Ramiz Brahimaj's ear. I mean, it was
brutal. It was brutal, man.
That is the thing of nightmare. Literally, like, just seeing that made me feel so sick. And like, it was shared online. Usually I'm good with this type of thing, but I was just looking at it like, oh god, you can see the cartilage, you can see everything about it.
He didn't know what happened. He was throwing his hands up. He's like, what's happened?
Yeah, your ear's off, mate. Well, let's kick off last weekend's recap. Our boy, he did it. Glover Teixeira took out Thiago Santos in seriously impressive fashion in the main event of UFC Vegas 13. Yeah. But before we break into the main event, we have to talk about the co-main event first, and I have to ask, mate, is there something wrong with me? I mean, for weeks, I haven't made a bold claim at all. For weeks, I've been holding my tongue. I've been thinking, right, let's start breaking this down. Well, let's start sitting on the fence. I've kept my cards close to my chest, and the one time that I make a bold claim, he bloody lets me down again. Tanabosa suffered a defeat to the former heavyweight champion, Andrei Arlovsky, in a three-round boar fest. And I'm not saying boar as in the big old beast. Yeah. Literally, boar. Making you fall asleep. Yeah, it's the type of fight I don't like at all. Like, if you flick through the highlights, they're stood there the entire time. There's no takedowns, nothing. They're just stood there a couple of meters apart from each other. I know boys wouldn't be socially distancing, but come on. I mean, they literally just stood dancing without throwing many strikes. I think it was across three rounds. Bosa landed 68 punches. Arlovsky landed 34. So I'm not really sure how Arlovsky wins, but he did win by 29-28. But that's a pretty piss poor fight, in my opinion. Said when you consider there's no takedowns at all, and you can only land 34 punches and win the fight across three rounds, that's 10 punches a round. What's going on? And that just sets a very sore scene for MMA. And to me, this is the type of fight that you understand when people say it's boring. Like, matches that become a grapple fest can still be highly entertaining because of the level of skill that the guys are showing. Like, do you remember Diaz versus Pettis at UFC 241? That was an insane matchup. Like, the jiu-jitsu on display was awesome to watch. And both guys were rolling everywhere. It was just amazing to see. And then getting up and striking like anything. But this was just a very dull matchup. And to wrap it up, Bosa lost by split decision. And in general, the hype behind him has now been flushed down the drain. Because I'm not saying he's been derailed or anything like that. But just after seeing that, you aren't excited for his next bout. It's like when people are saying about O'Malley being derailed. The thing is, I still want to see O'Malley fight again because he brings that exciting fight. Whereas in this fight, Bosa didn't bring anything to the fight. That's what I mean, is it's not a derail in the sense that he was battered, but you just, for me, it's worse to be derailed by people not being excited about you than to be derailed by being knocked out.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. It was just like a counter punch straight, wasn't it? It was like, if you throw, I'm going to counter you and hit you. Like, it was just to see him all the way through three rounds.
Exactly, mate. And that made for such a boring fight. And then, that was the worst thing, is they were both trying to counter-strike each other. And I get that. But all they were doing, really, was hopping back and forth. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all they were doing. They were trying to counter-strike, but keeping maybe that distance between them didn't allow for that to happen. They both had the same game plan. None of them pushed for anything. And as I said, you just think, well, one of you has to change handcuff here because you're not the same fighter. You can do something different. It doesn't make for a good fight. And overall, I was just very disappointed. Props to Arlovsky for getting the win. But besides that, it was a very lackluster co-main event. But let's move on to our main event of the evening to liven things up a bit here. Boy, did it bring thunder. Wow. Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Santos was exactly what we wanted it to be. I mean, Thiago's striking power was on display, but it was Teixeira who was able to utilise experience, pin Moretta down, and then submit him in the third round. I mean, I loved watching this fight. I thought Glover looked great. I think he looks tough as old boots. He just looks so rough and dirty to get in the cage with, and he's just dangerous in every fight. In every fight, you think you can rock him, you think you can knock him out, But for some reason, he's just got that.
That's what wakes him up. Yeah, that's what wakes him up.
It's terrifying, mate. I mean, stats say that Santos knocked him down once, I think. But I think you could argue that there was another knockdown in the very first minute of the fight. I mean, Santos came out with power and clipped Glover two or three times. And in that time, I think one more shot would have dropped him. But he was smart. He fell down. This what I mean is, I can understand why they probably didn't count it as a knockdown. Because he kind of like, he gets clipped and then he kind of stumbles forward and like falls to his knees. And then goes for the double leg takedown.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe they're counting it as that. But for me, there's no doubt that he went to his knees because Santos had clipped him. But yeah, he held on to that double leg and managed to get Santos down for a long time and recover. And I was surprised that despite being rocked, when he pushed Santos up against the cage, as I said, still a bit wobbly, he wasn't finished by some of Thiago's elbows.
Yeah.
And then he was able to continue to beat Santos up. And you think, that is some heart, that is some power, that is some strength just to be in there. And I said, not be finished by some elbows to the head after you've been rocked.
That's crazy.
There's something about him that just screams a unique sort of... I said, they say there's an ability to have a tough hide where your skin is just rough. I mean, if anyone's got it, it's Teixeira, because he just doesn't go out. And also, the finish was great. Dom Cruise said it on the commentary team. He said that, we can see Glover get rocked, but you can't count him out because we've seen him finish guys in a bad state before. And once more, he did it again. He got dropped by Santos and then was able to fight through that adversity, regain focus, regain top position, and sink that rear naked choke in to force the tap. What a story he has. He's now ranked the number one guy in the world. And for me, there was nothing left apart from the title shot.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree. I literally agree with you. He deserved the title shot after that performance as well.
As I said, I mean, I think he's 41, 42 years old. He's beating everyone that he needs to. But he's just beat Anthony Smith. He's just beat Thiago Santos. Both of them guys have recently fought for the title. Give Glover that shot. And I think Glover gives Jan a hard fight. And I can't wait to see it.
They're a close fight as well, though. For the title, John Jones and Santos was a close fight.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. John Jones, Santos was a close fight. I know Smith wasn't as such. But Smith has also beaten Gustafsson and stuff like that. I mean, it's seriously impressive to see what's happening there. The only situation I can see maybe changing this is the fact that Yuri Prochazka and Dominic Reyes have been matched up. Potentially, if that fight happens before Glover gets a title shot, so say Adesanya Blachowicz happens for the light heavyweight belt, and then in that time you've got Reyes Prochazka happening, then potentially I see Glover being left out a little bit, that maybe he has to face Reyes or Prochazka. But I'm hoping that if you take out the number one ranked guy in the world, being Santos, you don't need to fight for that number one ranked position. You need to fight for the title. And I hope that's what Dana sees. I hope that's what the UFC do for him, because there's no doubt to me that's where he deserves to be. And I cannot wait 100%. To see him go for that title. But let's move on to our preview of next week's card. We are bringing a new main event to today's post. It's not within the UFC. No, this came last night at Bellator 252. So just before we move on to a preview of next week's card, we've got one more fight to talk about. For those who haven't seen it, go watch Patricio Pitbull against Pedro Carvalho for the featherweight title at Bellator MMA. You will see one of the scariest 145-pound fighters out there. Patricio Pitbull decimated the rising prospect Pedro Carvalho by knocking him out in the very first round of the main event. Pitbull rocked Carvalho two or three times before landing a beautiful two-punch combination, a left hook followed by a right hand that literally flung Carvalho onto the canvas. He dropped heavy. What was so entertaining about this fight is that it was just under 4 minutes long, but packed a lot of action in that time and just showed how advanced Patricio Pitbull is for some of the Bellator guys. I'm not discrediting Pedro Carvalho by any means, but Pitbull is now 31-4. And he barely took any damage from the SBG trained Portuguese fighter. I mean, what did you think of the fight and the performance?
Like, there was so much hype about this fight. Like, it was stopped for one for COVID, and they were just dying to get in there and fight each other. But like you say, Pitbull is literally a Pitbull. He'll not stop. It was full on domination, and he basically just knocked him out.
Absolutely. I mean, his striking does look so clean, but also his power looks unreal. Now, the striking isn't similar by any means, but I would say he's got the same power as McGregor had at 145 pounds. He's got those quick hands that clean people out. It's not just about like a Holloway type fighter where you pick up the volume, or as I said, sometimes land that one heavy punch. Literally, he looks so good with just overall striking, and as those hands are so powerful. When you saw him land a few of them punches against Carvalho, you see him wobble, and that's what I find so impressive about it, is that like it's not just the idea of one clean punch that swipes someone out. It's the idea of them punches building up before that. You literally see the guy start wobbling, start shaking, and then, as I said, then he was able to land that 1-2 that was just perfect. It put him out. It wasn't as if it was like a punch that wobbled him and then he went for the TKO like ground or pound finish. Nope. He did enough to literally get that clean 2-punch combination that, as I said, guys, watch the fight. The way Carvalho falls, it's heavy.
It's hard,
like. I honestly think at 31-4, we have to consider Pitbull as one of the best featherweights in the world right now. Bellator can sometimes be accused of putting top guys against cans, but Pitbull has fought and beat some of the best. He's fought the UFC's new signing, Mike Chandler. He beat him, TKO'd him. The new Bellator bantamweight champion, Juan Archuleta, Pitbull beat him. His next challenge is Emmanuel Sanchez in this featherweight Grand Prix. Yeah. He's already beat Emmanuel Sanchez. Then he lost to Daniel Strauss to lose his title about 6 fights ago, came back and beat Daniel Strauss again. This is something he's fought these guys multiple times, and he's beating them all.
Wait, he's called out for a UFC and Bellator cross-path promotion, and he wants to fight the featherweight champion in UFC.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I sort of find so impressive. I genuinely think he would do well against a lot of these UFC featherweights. He is all around a great fighter, but especially in the striking department. He is a pit bull. He's short, stocky, and then just these punches are so heavy. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the type of guy like that is, it's not... I can understand in Bellator, some of the champions, when they look at it and you think, yeah, well, if he went to the UFC, he wouldn't do much. I honestly think if Pitbull was able to fight in the UFC or fight some UFC fighters, I still think he'd be one of the top guys. I think if, say, there was like an Ultimate Fighter style scenario, yeah, where he was in a house with them, I think he would. He might not win it, but he might get the semi-finals or potentially even win it. He is that good that he won't get put out. He wouldn't get exposed early on. He's not that type of fighter. He's so good. And as I said, I think we need to consider him one of the top guys in MMA right now, because he is a pleasure to watch.
Definitely.
Before we close this part of the show, I just want to shine some light on one more guy, Yaroslav Amosov, Bellator's welterweight contender, who improved to 25-0 last night. Bellator have their very own Khabib. He beat the undefeated 11-0 Logan Storley by split decision, and it was a really good fight. I think Amosov did learn a lot in this fight. I don't think he looks anywhere near as good as Khabib, but as I said, when you've got a record of 25-0, there's a lot on you, and there's a lot to think that that could be one of the sport's next biggest prospects. Logan Storley's beat some fantastic guys. He even, do you know Joaquin Buckley, the guy who landed that 2-touch spinning kick?
Yeah.
Logan Storley beat him earlier on in his career. So this Logan Storley was a great wrestler, great fighter, but Yaroslav Amosov was able to beat him. As I said, there's not a lot of time to talk about the fight itself, but go out there, check out Amosov, 25-0. That is all I have to say on that guy. What a contender Bellator have there. Now we have completed our review of last weekend's event, we move on to a preview of this weekend's UFC card, and once more, we will dabble in a bit of Bellator too. So, we have a few small matches to talk about first, because these are matches that I just don't think we can miss. We have to shed a little bit of light on them. We might not be able to break them down, but being UK guys, we have to shine a bit of light on these fighters. And this is mixing from UFC and Bellator. UFC-wise, you've got Rhys McKee versus Alex Morono. They're both coming off losses. They'll both want to rectify them losses. Rhys McKee, the former Cage Warriors champion, he looks absolutely awesome. He's a great fighter. It's just a shame that he got Kazmat Chimaev in his UFC debut. But everyone knows that Rhys McKee is going to be a great fighter. And Alex Morono is far more experienced. He's been in there a little while longer now. And Alex Morono is coming off a loss to Chaos Williams, who we'll talk about a bit later on in the podcast. But he came off a 27-second loss to him.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean, is we didn't get to see a lot of Morono in that fight. So I think this fight between McKee and Morono, they're both going to really want to rectify what happened last time out, and they're both going to want to put on a great display. Now, following that, we have Corey McKenna versus Kelly Hansen, both 21 years old. I mean, that is seriously, seriously impressive. I think they're both fantastic jiu-jitsu experts. And overall, I said at 21 years old to be in the UFC, Kay Hansen 7-3, Corey McKenna 5-1. I mean, that is very, very impressive. McKenna is also the first Welsh woman to be in the UFC. To have that on your resume at 21 years old is scary. They've both only tasted defeat a few times, both great grappling experts. So it'd be really nice to see these two get in there, fight. I think it's at strawweight being contested at. Yeah, and if they can both prove how elite their grappling is, then I think we might see quite a nice future for them both in the UFC. Because you need some grapplers as well in there, and I think these two could genuinely be two of the best to do it. Both 21, regardless of who wins or loses here, we are going to see two very good prospects of the sport definitely come up. Now, in Bellator, these aren't English fighters or European fighters, but we have the 7-0 Joey Davis fighting Bobby Lee. Now, I believe Joey Davis trains out of the same gym as AJ McKee. As I said, at 7-0, he seems to be one of the tipped to be one of the biggest prospects in the sport at the moment. He's 7-0 for Bellator. He looks like a fantastic wrestler. I think he's an NCAA wrestling champion. But overall, Joey Davis, I think it's Joe Black Ice Davis. Check him out as well. He looks like he'll be a future prospect for the sport. But to open that main card in Bellator, you have Ruffian Stotts versus Keith Lee. Now, that is Kevin Lee's brother, the UFC Kevin Lee's brother. Keith Lee fights in Bellator. I mean, I think he's 7-3. He's looking really good, actually. He's got some fantastic wins at the moment. And then Ruffian Stotts. I mean, Ruffian beat Cass Bell last time out. Cass Bell was this 5-0 Bellator guy who was basically tipped to be one of the next biggest things. And Ruffian Stotts goes in there. I think he finished him. He looks like one of these guys, Ruffian, who is just very good at striking, but overall his grappling game is scarily good. He trains out of Duke Rufus' gym, so he trains alongside the Pettis brothers. He looks like he's going to be one of the next biggest bantamweights for Bellator, and I think he's 14-1. Now, the one thing I might get wrong here, I think he's the former LFA champion, but if not, he was definitely high up at LFA, and I've always said this, LFA are no joke. Anyone who comes from LFA, Brandon Royval, who's in the UFC at the moment at flyweight, he's doing some bits. He's from LFA, he's a former LFA champion. I'm sure Ruffian was. They are no joke, and they are top-level fighters. And 14-1, he's going to do some bits. And so he comes up against the 7-3, Keith Lee. Keith Lee has, last time out, he beat Vinicius Sani, who's 11-6. That's okay, but before that, it was Sean Bunch. And Sean Bunch has fought some of the great fighters of Bellator. He was one of them guys who they kind of tipped to be one of the better people in the Bellator bantamweight division, but no. Keith Lee goes in there, beats him, and he's on a 4-fight win streak now. So that is also going to be a really good matchup for you guys to check out in Bellator. Check out two really good bantamweight guys. Now, let's move on to our co-main of the evening in the UFC. Two hard-hitting welterweights collide as Abdulrazak Alhassan takes on Kalin Chaos Williams. Now, Chaos came onto the scene after he took out Alex Morono back in February. He did this in 27 seconds on late notice. I think he came in with probably a week's notice for this fight, but then took 27 seconds to knock out Morono, and it was impressive. He went in and fired. It wasn't just one punch. It was just so much heavy hands. And the thing is, I genuinely called this. I remember this fight happening, and I remember saying, I remember liking Chaos's name. I thought, he was 7-1 at the time. I was like, oh, this guy could be quite interesting. Like, yeah, go on, make yourself out there. And I even said, I was talking to my mates at the time, and I said to them, this guy, I think, will go in there and knock him out. Because if you're going in there, known as this hard-hitting guy, if you've got a record of 7-1, if you're stepping in on really late notice, you haven't had a lot of time to train, what are you going to do when you go in there? You're going to try and make a statement. And this is where I first started saying about guys who stepping on short week notice want to make a statement, and that's especially if you're going for your first UFC fight. Do you know what I mean? It's not always about, I can understand how maybe Paul Felder's not going to go in there and go guns blazing, but if you're going in there, as I said, 7-1, relatively new to MMA, and you're this heavy hitting guy, you're going to want to go in there and you're going to want to prove why you got called up for this shot knock him out. And that's exactly what he did against Morono. But he comes up now against Abdulrazak Alhassan, who has just had 2 years out of the sport due to a controversy outside of the sport. But he came back to lose against, I think, Munir Lazarz in an awesome matchup. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Lazarz, I think, once more was 7-1 or something like that. He was this up-and-coming guy. He might have been 6-0, but he's this up-and-coming guy, I think, from Morocco. But he was actually a guy that someone had tagged Dana White in and said, oh, you've got to check out this guy's kicks. And Dana liked him. He was like, yeah, he's actually well good. And then, as I said, he got his shot against Abdul Razak Alhazan, and he put on such a great performance. Alhazan is terrifying. He is so powerful. As I said, he lost Lazarz, but the reason there were so many eyes on him is because before that, he knocked out Nico Price. He knocked out Sabah Hamasi twice, and he knocked out Charlie Ward, the Bellator fighter, the big guy. Yep, Alhazan KO'd him. Literally, he has this scary KO power that just gets people out of there. Now, he wasn't able to do it against Lazarz, but he definitely had times in that fight where you thought, yep, Lazarz is dropping, Lazarz is out, and then Lazarz managed to just defend enough to keep in it. But bearing in mind we spoke about how Chaos likes fighting, well, I would say Alhazan fights the exact same fight as him. For me, these guys should both come out swinging heavy. And I'm not saying they should, as in that's my advice. As in, I genuinely think they're both going to come out and we're going to see the fight over in the first round. In the first minute, I would say. I'm going to call first minute. I think they're both going to come out there and go for a KO finish. The only way I can see that changing is if both of them come out smart and think, right, I know these guys are, I know the other, my opposition is powerful. Let's maybe not swing. But I'm still going to call for an early round finish. I think Alhazan's going to get it because I haven't seen enough from Williams. I've only seen what he's done from Morono. And everyone else has spoken about how good Williams is. So potentially he goes in there and gets a KO finish over Alhazan. But Alhazan's one of the guys in the first minute who lets everything go.
Wait, he does struggle. Go for Williams, sorry. I had to do it, didn't I? I had to do it.
Go on, give me your reasons. Go on.
I don't know, like, he's, the record's 10-1, I'd say, is everything. But then again, Abdul's 10-2. So, to be honest, it can go anywhere. But for his last win in for a 27 seconds knockout, just says all to me.
Mm-hmm. So, actually, yeah, I'm just going to correct myself from earlier on. I was saying 7-1, 9-1. I don't know how I got that confused there, but yeah, 9-1, and then he went 10-1 after beating Morono. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's also, I think it's going to be fair to see which way it goes, but the only thing is, for me, Alhazan is one of them guys who comes in the first minute, and yes, he has a problem with stamina, especially later on in the fight, but when he gets his strikes going, he rips to the body, and he just throws hooks in at people's head, even when they've got their guard up, and he manages to get them knocked out. Check out some of Alhazan's knockouts, and then I'll also check out some of Williams, and maybe I might rethink, but I'm going to say Alhazan KOs him in the first minute. I assume you'll say that for Williams, or at some stage of the fight, I do think one of these guys knocks each other out, and if they don't knock each other out, I do think by the third round, both guys are going to be absolutely knackered. Either way, whoever wins out of this, I would like to see them get a top 15 to top 10 guy next. I would have loved to see either of these guys face Mike Perry, an issue sort of arises, especially with Alhazan, when you look at the history that Alhazan has had recently. The reason he took two years off is because he had a court case to do with sexual assault. And obviously Mike Perry's got his current allegations from his ex-wife going on. That fight surely can't be made. From an ethical standpoint from the UFC, I don't think you can put that matchup together. And then obviously, as I said, if Chaos wins it, brilliant. You've got Mike Perry fighting, is it next weekend? Yeah, you've got Mike Perry fighting next weekend. So that could be a matchup that's made. But equally, obviously, if Mike Perry wins next weekend, he might not want to face a guy who's unranked. We're just going to have to see how that goes. But I always say it, Mike Perry's this guy who I always want to see people face because I just think he brings such a great fight. Mike Perry offers that strange fight that you could potentially knock him out or submit him, but the whole time he is dangerous. The whole time he could KO you. So it's testing your skills, and that's what I'd like to see. But let's move on to our main event of the evening. The legend, Paul, the Irish Dragonfelder, steps in on 5 days' notice to face RDA, Rafael Dos Anjos, after Islam Makhachev stepped out on... the 18-1, sorry, Islam Makhachev stepped out on 5 days' notice, yeah. I mean, what a fight this would be. What a way to prove you have balls. Step in on 5 days notice, £155. I love this fight. RDA's been giving wrestlers now for a long time, and almost he was being a bit of a sacrifice at £175. He is 1-4 in his last five fights, but he is still getting main events. And I think that kind of goes to show that I think the UFC have been giving him these tough fights that he's not able to kind of, not win, but they're giving him a tough match. I mean, he's fought Usman, Covington, and Michael Chiesa in that time as well. I mean, they are all amazing grapplers. So I think kind of they've not been allowing RDA to fight the type of fights that he likes having. And that's a sad state of affairs. As I said, 1-4, considering you're the former champion, that's not looking too good. That's looking a bit like Tyrone Woodley level.
Yeah.
So now he's back at £155. We get to see him face a top-level striker and all-round mixed martial artist. And I think we're going to see an amazing fight on Saturday night. For me, Felder actually beat Hooker in his last outing. I know it was a very close fight. I think Hooker did actually outstrike him. But overall, I personally think Felder won that fight. And I think what everyone is missing for this fight on Saturday night is that these guys are two of the very best lightweights facing off. It might not say it in the rankings. However, Felder started his career 10-0. And he's got wins over people like Edson Barboza and that. He was 17-4 before his loss to Hooker. Now, 17-4 is a very, very good record. His record speaks for itself, but he's only also been finished once, and that was by doctor's stoppage against Francisco Trinaldo. So that is very impressive to say. And then you've got RDA, the former lightweight champ. He's fought the best of the best, but he's back where he belongs at £155. He's an amazing southpaw striker who's got an all-around game. Both these guys, I think, match up very well against each other. And for me, I think Felder takes it. Anyone else on 5 days' notice, I'd be wary of. But I think Felder's the type of guy who'd be ready for £155 on 5 days' notice. And bearing in mind he's never been stopped, I think he's going to put RDA through the paces on Saturday night. And I think he's going to pick up an impressive win. Yeah. What do you think?
To be honest, I don't know if people know, but Paul Felder was training for a fight in March. So I think he's going to be as ready as he can be. Like, I seen a video that he was dropping weight, which from March now was obviously... But, yeah.
Do you mean from last March?
No, he's meant to be fighting in March. That's what I heard.
So
he's in camp. So that's where he's took the day on 5 years' notice and still...
Yeah, because he's already where he wants to be. He's 40, he's training. I mean, I love that. I think that's... As I said, I think it shows not only that you have balls, but also it shows the type of guy you are. Because I could be wrong here. I'm just going to check on the UFC rankings. But I think... I don't think RDA's ranked, is he? I don't think he's ranked at lightweight. I'll just double check this now. Yeah, he's not ranked at lightweight. He was going to be facing... he's ranked 12th in welterweight. And then he was going to be fighting the 12th ranked lightweight. Whereas Paul Felder's 7th. I mean, this is why I like Felder a lot. Because you think about it, what's Felder got to gain here? Not much. Apart from pushing himself potentially into a good fight for March. But other than that, you have an unranked guy, or the ranked 12th welterweight, coming in, and you are ranked 7, so they are ranked 5 ranks below you in a different division. You have nothing to lose. Sorry, you have so much to lose in this fight, but you are still going to take it to keep this fight on. That card, let's be honest, that UFC card, if it didn't have Paul Felder in there, was in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Abdul Razak Al-Hassan versus Chaos Williams was not a main event.
No.
I mean, Julian Marquez versus Sabarek Safarov, once more, not a main event, or not even a co-main. The only person there, I guess, is Corey McKenna versus Kay Hansen, which actually will get quite a few people watching because a lot of the UK fans will watch that. But equally, that's no way that you can't be in a main event in your first UFC outing. So it really does. Paul Felder really saved the day. And as I said, that's why I like him a lot. I really rate the guy. I think he's a fantastic fighter, and I think he brings the heat each time. Regardless if he wins or loses, he gains my respect for that fight.
Yeah.
And finally, just another note before we sign off for the night. Darian Caldwell versus AJ McKee on Thursday night. Let's see who progresses to the, I think it's the semi-final of the Featherweight Grand Prix. I think Pitbull has Emmanuel Sanchez. So let's just check.
Darion Caldwell was a former bantamweight champ, wasn't he? That was right.
He was, yeah, yeah.
Was, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And then I think... this will be who progresses to the final. That's why. Yeah. So AJ McKee's beat Georgi Karakian hit by KO in the first round. Then he beat Derek Campos by sub in the third round. And then Caldwell has beat Henry Corrales by unanimous decision. He subbed Adam Boric in the first round. And now he faces AJ McKee on the 19th of November.
Yeah,
and then on the other side of it, you had Freire beat Juan Archuleta by decision. Freire KO'd Carvalho. And then you had Sanchez beat Tywin Claxton. And then beat Daniel Weichel by decision. So them two face each other.
19th of November, you see. That's going to be a good weekend for MMA because you've got the Leon Edwards versus Kajma fight as well. Yeah, on the 19th of December, you see, or November?
November.
Oh, my bad.
No, it's right. It's still going to be a good weekend because that's UFC 255, so we can leave. But yeah, as I said, these two... I could be wrong here, but I think... combined record of 31-3.
Jesus.
Bear in mind, AJ McKee's never been beaten either. Yeah, and it's worth just noting as well that UFC 255 is also that weekend. So on the 19th, you've got this Bellator, massive Bellator match going on. And then a couple of days later, you've got UFC 255. So it is going to be a good weekend for MMA for us. But as I said, Caldwell, the former champ, 15-3, beating the very best. Last time out, he beasted Adam Boric. And I also wanted to note with that, that was another fight that I did call, because a lot of people were ruling Caldwell out for that. A lot of people were saying, nah, Boric is going to go in there because he got that flying knee KO and he's going to KO him and move on to win it. Nope. First round, Caldwell just kept taking him down and submits him. Caldwell is so, so good. And the people he's lost to have once more been fantastic fighters. I think it was Kyoji Horiguchi, who's like that, 28-3 or something like that? Like... Jeez. Darion Caldwell, despite 15-3, is a good record, despite it not being the best we've seen. He is one of the best, without a doubt. Yeah, he's lost to he lost to Joe Timanglio when he was 9-1 at the time. But then other than that, he's only lost to Kyoji Horiguchi twice, which was in Rising once for the Rising Bantamweight Championship, and then Horiguchi came over to Bellator and won the belt off him by decision. So, Kyoji Horiguchi is 28-3. And at the time he beat Caldwell, he was 28-2. So, that's what I mean. Like, if you're going to boast about how good he actually is, you've got to look at who he's lost to with 15-3. And you think, yeah, he is without a doubt one of the best. And he faces a hard guy with AJ McKee, 16-0. All of AJ McKee's fights have been in Bellator. So, 16-0 in Bellator. And he's only been fighting since 2015. So in 5 years, he's won 16 fights in Bellator. If you put that into the UFC, you go, yeah, actually, shit, that is world championship contenders. AJ McKee knocks people out. AJ McKee subs people. AJ McKee just looks so, so good all around. I think this fight is such a hard one to call because previously, again, Caldwell versus Boric, I didn't find that hard to call. Now I do because I think Caldwell was always able to expose Boric. But because of the type of fighter AJ McKee is as well, I think it's a lot harder to say. I don't think AJ will KO him, but I could see AJ picking up a unanimous decision victory, going 17-0. But if not, I can also see Caldwell utilising his... It's harsh to say experience, because they've only had two fights away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Caldwell has a very, very superior wrestling game to most bantamweights. And I can potentially see him handing AJ his first defeat and as progressing to the final. And I think Freire or Pitbull, I think he beats Emmanuel Sanchez as well. So I think we'll potentially see a Caldwell versus Pitbull final, but we might also see Pitbull versus McKee in the final.
I'd like to see that more, yeah.
I can't wait to see either of them. Genuinely, I think as long as Pitbull gets to the final, I don't care if it's McKee or Caldwell, because they are the top three for me that just scream superstar. And they screen the championship. So, such a hard fight to call. But I can't wait to see that as well. That's Thursday night for you guys. But before we sign off, we have a few fight announcements. We've got three fights to announce. And then we've got another big announcement that hopefully some of you wouldn't have heard. Firstly, fight announcement. We have Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown. Good fight. Two legends of the sport. I think it's a good fight for both the guys because Conduit's been struggling a bit. Matt Brown came off a KO loss to Miguel Baeza. But I like that fight a lot because I think they are two legends of the sport. I think it's definitely worthy of a either a co-main or just kind of in the on a pay-per-view card. I would like to see the fight happen. You've got Gaslam, Kelvin Gaslam versus Ian Heinisch as well. That's been announced for middleweight. That's a brilliant fight in my opinion. Both these guys are not the tallest middleweights, but they're both decent strikers with very good wrestling. I'm really looking forward to seeing that because Gaslam has struggled because at welterweight, he didn't really have that power, slash he wasn't good enough at welterweight. But at middleweight, he had scary KO power, but wasn't tall enough for these guys. It's as simple as that. He was really struggling with the range against these taller fighters. Heinisch isn't as tall as the other guys. So Heinisch kind of suffers that same problem. They're both guys who were tipped to be very big things, but they both had some pretty disappointing losses. So I think Heinisch Gaslam is actually going to be a very, very challenging fight between two guys who need to win.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about who's more likely to. It's genuinely both guys need to leave everything in there because they need a win now. I think Gaslam's on a couple of fight losing streak now, and it's not looking good for him. I think Heinisch has lost a couple as well that he shouldn't have lost. So these two guys need to go in there, prove why they're kind of tipped to be these next top five guys. Because I think they're both in the top 10 ranking. And as I said, I'd love to see both these guys face off against each other. I think it's going to be a great fight. Finally, Alistair Overeem versus Alexander Volkov. Both have beaten Walt Harris in their last fights. Both, in my opinion, deserve a top three spot now. Not to say that they need to be top three in the ranking, but that's what, if they win, whoever wins this fight, they need to look at maybe one more fight and then a championship fight. They need to look at fighting someone like Ngannou next, or potentially, I mean, I don't think they'll do Rozenstruik again, but it could happen. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be one of them guys next. It's got to be one of them top three guys who want a title shot in the future. Maybe Curtis Blaydes. And then they'll probably get a title shot. It's a really good matchup because it's kind of right in the middle of that heavyweight scene. And as I said, the winner of this, to me, is going to start pushing for that title shot within two fights or so. Now, our big announcement. You mentioned it to me a minute ago, and it is some massive news. The Cage Warriors president, Graham Boylan, has just had his promoter's license in California accepted. So that means that we could potentially actually see Cage Warriors move across to America next year. And I mean, that is massive news. Cage Warriors, without a doubt, is one of the biggest outlets coming out of the UK. If anything, it's probably the UK's biggest promotion and most successful of all time in the UK. As I said, to get a license in California, I know that Graham and his partner, Edith Lavelle, they both do like California a lot. They're both usually out there on holiday. They've got a good relationship with the UFC. And now to say that they're actually out there, not too far from Vegas at all, they've actually got a license to be able to put events on out there. I think we might see Cage Warriors now in the next 2 to 3 years become something massive. Maybe when the UFC buy them out, they'll become that big. As a feeder, they are basically now a feeder to the UFC for the top talent. And if they can extend their license to California now, you might see some of these American young talents stop going to Bellator and stuff like that and start going to Cage Warriors and then becoming big there. I mean, it's, to me, that's very, very scary to think how good they could actually be now. And as I said, it's just massive news. This is the type of news we also want to be releasing on the show because it's not always about fight announcements or small things. You heard it from us now. This could be one of the biggest things to happen in UK mixed martial arts for the next few years. In 2 or 3 years, this could be the pivotal factor that pushes UK mixed martial arts to worldwide audiences. Now, another thing that I wanted to note as well, I picked up on this about 6.5, 7, 8 months ago now. Sky and Bellator, something will go on there. So Bellator might, I personally think Bellator are going to take the European market. I think Bellator have some of the best fighters in Europe. I've said this a lot. I think they've got some really top talent. I think they've got some really interesting guys. And I think the level of European prospects they have is better than some of the prospects in Cage Warriors and the UFC because they can afford to pay them higher. They can afford to start chucking them into better fights straight away. I said this for a while back. I'd heard a few rumours about potentially Bellator moving away from DAZN, which they ended up doing, and then this idea of a Sky deal coming along, which then they aired their Recharged event on. However, now recently we've seen Bellator, the Bellator Paris event, obviously making history, but also getting on the BBC with that. Definitely. And then I noticed about 4, 5, 6 months ago, Liam McCourt was on Sky doing an interview at like 7 a.m. And I remember thinking, they never get Darren Till on there. They never get these UFC stars. Why do they want to invest in Bellator? Now, if you go and look at some of the Bellator highlights recently, or go to their social media pages, Instagram, Twitter, look at who's interviewing them. It's people from Sky, and it's got Sky background on it now. I think Sky are potentially interested in boosting their Bellator market now, because they've obviously always had some rights to it. And they always show Bellator fights now. But now that I think they're realising that the UK mixed martial arts industry is growing rapidly, I think it's the Daily Mail and the Sun have the biggest, their second biggest online traffic is MMA. As I said, if you start putting all that, piece it all together, I think we might see cage wars in the UFC lining up in a few years to be an actual official partnership, which has a more like a feeder style system to it and all funded by the UFC. Mm-hmm. And I think cage wars will start growing the UK market across the world. And then I think Bellator might start bringing the American market more to the UK and to Europe, and Sky might form a little deal there as well. Oh, said you heard it here first. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens over the next few years, but I'll leave it on that. I'll get everyone's toes tingling. That is all we have time for. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Be sure to like, share and subscribe to us, and be sure to tune in next week. We'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on this Saturday, the 22nd of November. We have two title fights, Shevchenko versus Maia for the flyweight title, and coincidentally, we have another flyweight battle in the men's division, as Tyson Figueiredo welcomes Alex Perez to the centre of the octagon. I've been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to my co-host, Sean, for returning to the show, being the guy you always are, and making it a fun one this week. It was great fun, mate. Thank you very much, and I look forward to next week with you. Definitely. Be sure to let us know, is what I should say, any feedback for the podcast that you guys have, and let us know any guests that you'd like me, Sean, and Liam to speak to over the next few weeks. Thank you all very much, and take care of yourselves.